And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Makes it a two-point game.
Here's your mismatch right here.
Now it's Luka. Deep three on the floor. Luka Magic!
Take down Winslow!
Welcome to 77 Minutes in Heaven, a Dallas Mavericks podcast, the only Dallas Mavericks podcast, and in fact, I believe the only podcast covering basketball in any manner. Don't fact check that.
No. It's the only one I'm doing right now, so it's the only one that exists.
It's the only one that exists, man. Like, it's wild that more people don't talk about the NBA. It's like, it's as popular as it is. It's great. We're the only one. So, you know.
We have the market cornered.
Anyway, I'm Tim Cato. I write about the Mavericks for The Athletic. This is Dave Dufour. He talks about the Mavericks on my podcast. The podcast. I can say the.
No, your podcast. Your podcast. I like that you just took ownership of it. This podcast actually belongs to Mr. Athletic. So.
Oh, man. But Mr. Athletic is a lovely chap. I wouldn't want to take
it away from him. Yeah, great guy. Great guy. Very charitable. Hey, look. We got to talk about this Rockets game, man. I watched it live, which, you know, sometimes I do, but I rewatched it, and there's a lot of good stuff there that wasn't there a week ago, defensively in particular.
Yeah, and I mean, the obvious starting point is the defense was there.
The defense was there.
Yeah.
That's the big
difference. Yeah, I would agree with that. So, I mean, I will push back in a tiny way just to say that the defense has actually been better. A lot of that is the Clippers outlier.
Right.
And I would absolutely agree that the defense has not been good enough, that the ways that they're failing is sometimes just a sign of, all right, this has to be better. This can't happen. You know, the rebounding struggle. Like, they weren't a bad statistically rebounding team, but then there's times where they lost to the Lakers because they got 35-0 outscored on second chance points.
Right.
And some of that is fluky. Of course it is. Like, you never see that, and for good reason. And their underlying stats weren't that bad. But it's also, you know, what happens on the court, you still have to fix. Like, even if you're like, well, it's going to sort itself over time statistically, like, that is a way that I can talk about it sometimes. It is not a way a coach can just say, well, let's keep doing what we're doing because what's happened to us is aberrational. Like, that is not effective. It doesn't work. It's not a strategy that works for players. Clearly, part of the reasons that aberrational statistics correct themselves is because teams are actively trying to correct those things. So those absolutely go hand in hand. And it started with the starting lineup change and, you know, putting Maxi Kleber and Willie Cauley-Stein in for Dwight Powell and Tim Hardaway. What do you make of that?
Well, it's funny. The two big lineup, they've been avoiding it. And the truth of the matter is most of the league is starting two bigs. And Maxi is hardly, you know, he's not an old school big. I mean, he stretches the floor offensively. You know what he brings defensively. He can stay in front of a guy, in particular, most fours. Christian Wood, maybe a little bit of an issue, but guys like that are going to give him trouble. But for the most part, he's a solid defender. I actually, coming into the season, kind of thought, I wonder if we're going to see more too big. I wasn't thinking it would be Maxi and Willie Cauley-Stein. I was thinking it would be Powell. I was thinking, you know, Porzingis. The truth is, this actually unlocks a lot for them going forward. If this is something they're going to do more of, they have quite a few combinations that are going to work. In particular, if Willie Cauley-Stein remains this effective, which, you know, granted, it's early, but he's been pretty good, I think, so far.
Yeah, there's a number of things I like about it. I think that the flexibility, I'll start there since you mentioned it. if you think about it, if you think about just the how rotational math works for an NBA team, if the Mavericks are going to start Dorian Finney-Smith as a four, then there is no longer, and if they're not going to play Josh Green or Wes Iwundu, then there is no longer a wing you can bring off the bench. And that means that, you know, you're either having to pull someone out early and then something back in. Your bigs, honestly, are kind of getting a short shaft because their big man rotation when Kristaps gets back is going to be one of the deepest areas of the team, assuming Cauley-Stein performs, like you said. You know, if that keeps going, then that will be one of the deepest areas this team has. Dwight Powell will continue playing a lot of games, if not all of them, you know, for the most part, you know, barring a rest or, you know, small injury or whatever here and there. So I do wonder if the too big approach is the, you know, I do wonder, and I do think that the too big approach is probably the path forwards. It's not where I was earlier, you know, coming into the season, because it looked pretty comfortable that the team wanted to do Hardaway, Richardson, and Finney-Smith. And I like that, and I still like that. And that is still probably the lineup the team's going to work their way towards in postseason matchups and games where they need to go smaller. The playoffs trend small. So it would, you know, that is a lineup that still is important to this team. But just as you look at each regular season game, I really like starting two bigs. Like I'm increasingly mm-hmm. liking that. It helps you, you know, certainly it helps you defensively. I thought it was interesting just from kind of an identity standpoint. If you're going to revamp the starting lineup, they didn't just say, well, this piece isn't working, so let's try like for like replacement. I guess that would have been Cauley-Stein.
Right.
Alone. They also put Kleber in there. And they didn't take out Finney-Smith, which would be another like-for-like replacement. They right. bumped him down, and they took out Hardaway. So it wasn't a statement that, let's try to balance things out. It was a, we're going to put our four best defenders on the floor. Mm-hmm. And we can talk about that in a second if you want to push back on Cauley-Stein, because yeah. I can talk a little bit about something I wrote about today, on Tuesday.
Yeah.
But they put their four best defenders next to Luka, and four defenders with tons of size, where mm-hmm. the smallest player on the court is now Josh Richardson. And they right. said, we want to be a defensive team. And if it also helps our offense and makes our offense better to start games, that's great. But we're going to put our four best defenders, and we're not going to lose the rebounding battle. This is the identity we wanted headed into the season. This is what we're continuing. This is like what we're now fully embracing, because we've seen the starting lineup, you know, doesn't quite get us to that level that we want to be at right now.
Yeah, I think you kind of nailed it. And I wonder if the next iteration of this doesn't turn into Dorian Finney-Smith coming off the bench and helping that bench unit out defensively, and having Hardaway out there to add a little bit more space, a little bit more scoring punch. I mean, we saw what Hardaway did in that game against the Rockets. And he's not going to do that every night, but he does have that capability, and Dorian Finney-Smith really doesn't. And I do think that there is going to be this tightrope walking for this team until Porzingis comes back, where they are having to, you know, go back and forth, making the decision on leaning offense versus leaning defense. And it's going to be very much about Dorian Finney-Smith and Tim Hardaway Jr. I think that's going to be all season long.
Yeah. The only thing that slightly mucks it up in terms of, you know, Richardson's going to start when you're choosing between Finney-Smith and Hardaway, you know, I think that they're, I would love flexibility. I get the sense that Tim Hardaway is not totally chill with coming off the bench.
You think?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm trying to walk a line. And it's not to say that, you know, as long as he gets opportunities, it shouldn't matter. And it, especially in games like last night, where he plays starter minutes and gets starter, you know, scores like a starter, you know, has 30 points on 14 shots. That's great. And it might not be an issue. Maybe he just, you know, is this good in that role and it doesn't matter. Maybe this role lasts for one more game. Like there is so much variables. Like I don't want to project. I don't want to say, you know, on a podcast, I don't want to do the Windhorse thing where I'm like, please don't aggregate me. Because I'm not.
No, please aggregate us. Please aggregate us all you want.
Yeah, just on other parts.
No, no. Come on, aggregate Dave. Everything. But when people come to listen, you know, make sure that you get the full context. I'm not anti-aggregation, but let's get all the context. So please okay, aggregate
that's all,
us.
That's all fair. That's all fair.
Yeah.
I used to be a responsible aggregator at SB Nation.
That's right.
We talked about responsible aggregation. There is a good way to do it and a bad way to do it. Mm-hmm. Aggregation is not the problem. Anyway, this is a
right.
complete sidebar. Unless we're going to talk about internet journalism for the next hour, because I could.
No one cares.
All right. So the point being, I do think Maxey for Finney Smith makes some sense. I think Hardaway in the lineup makes some sense. Obviously, like we were just saying, this lineup was not that. It was not like for likes. It was a, you know, I really did see it as more of a statement about what the team wants to be. There may be a happy medium. I would hope the happy medium, or I think ideally for the regular season, especially the coming months, would be, you know, this kind of Luka, Richardson, Hardaway, Maxey, Porzingis. And if you're putting Porzingis,
well, you know, Porzingis and even Stouter Stein, defender. Right? Like you,
that
they have
idea
a big
was
man
thrown road. Out to me recently, last night. And I'm like, that's crazy. And then I thought about it some more and it's not. Yeah. It's not as crazy as I thought.
But they have options now, right?
They do.
And so if you've got a guy that Willie Cauley-Stein matches up well with, you now, like, you know, you're going to have these lineup combinations available to you, which is why it's important that they're working those guys together now, right? Yeah. Like, why wait until Porzingis comes back when you can be building that big man chemistry right now, and then you're only implementing or adding one guy to what you're already doing, and it's much easier, especially because Porzingis seems to be a big that's pretty easy to work around for other bigs.
Yeah. I mean, he's the most plug and play, will benefit any basketball, you know, lineup he could possibly enter into.
Yeah.
About Cauley-Stein, I know we've talked about him on this podcast. You know, I think we did in our last pod of last year. And all those things we said are still true. He can be a spacey player, you know, inconsistent certainly. Cauley-Stein's mistakes are I guess like more visible. You know, and just like, you know, they're different than Dwight Powell just being unable to, you know, actually affect somebody's shot at the rim, where he's in the right place, but he doesn't have the lift to really challenge someone, you know, just for example. And Cauley-Stein, it was brought to my attention that he really has great defensive numbers for the Mavericks. It's small sample size, but we're including both this season and last season. Last season, he was used a little bit situationally. When you're used situationally, you're usually used against matchups that you're going to play well against, and thus your numbers will look better. Your plus minus stuff will look better when you have a quicker hook, when you're not allowed to play through, you know, bad stretches. That's another, you know, situation where your plus minus stats will be better. But he was best on the team last season, excluding Kid Gilchrist, who had an even stranger appearance on the Mavericks than Cauley-Stein's kind of, you know, introduction and then injury and then absence from the bubble. And then this season, you know, he's still best on the team. And I don't know. I think that's interesting. I like I said, you know, the spaciness sometimes makes you think he's not doing, you know, like when you see him just not box out and then give up an offensive rebound and the team scores, you're like, oh, that's terrible. But I think there may be a overall, you know, when you look at the body of work, there is an effectiveness that he's bringing defensively. And certainly offensively, we saw that Luka was actually throwing alley-oops again. So, right. So yeah, I am increasingly becoming pro Cauley-Stein. I was never anti Cauley-Stein. I don't think I was doing my best to explain if he wasn't getting minutes, this is probably what the coaches are seeing. Now that he is getting minutes, consistent minutes, I like what I'm seeing. I assume the coaches are seeing the same thing. I would be upset if he's not consistently playing until he starts proving otherwise. As Rick Carlisle said after the Houston game, he's earning his minutes right now. And he is. Like he is fully earning them and deserves to continue earning them until proven otherwise.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree completely.
Well, we should talk about Luka as well, who played very well. Did not look like he was just been at hanging out at Cabo, if you will. So yeah. I mean,
he's not shooting well.
He's a little out of shape. Out of shape doesn't mean fat. It doesn't mean,
right.
You know, doesn't mean that he is still not a generationally good basketball player who's top 10 in the league, if not five.
But he's obviously not in his top physical condition.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if he's 5 or 10% off of what he is, like that does matter to some degree. But last night that was not that. You know, he did have 8 turnovers, he missed 13 shots, but you know, there's a few weird turnaround jumpers that he's attempting mm-hmm. in the lane now that, you know, he hit one but missed a couple, airballed one, in fact. I'm just a little confused at what the long term idea behind those shots are. You know, here and there they're fine, but you know, it attempt like 3 or 4 of those. Anyway,
early shot clock. Yeah.
I would have to go back and look. I don't want to, you know, I know he hit one of them
there's some bad shots. But those are two pointers.
Let's talk 3 pointers.
Right. But his shot profile is not great anyway, right? Like he shoots like 85% of his shots are pull-ups. So off the dribble threes. This year, going into that Rockets game, he was shooting like 16% or something or 12% on 3-point pull-ups off the dribble. Today, it's up to 21%. So this just goes to show how small the sample is. Like, he was able to affect it that much in one game. And that's just off the dribble threes. He had a nice catch-and-shoot three in that game, which, you know, was barely a catch-and-shoot. But he, you know, it was a catch-and-shoot. And I think if he could get more of those type of opportunities, his 3-point percentage is likely to go up. But the truth of the matter is, the shots that he takes are the most difficult shots in basketball. It's sort of like James Harden. James Harden hit a ridiculous amount of contested pull-up threes last year. Like, unsustainable. And he's actually doing it again this year. But way outside the norm for him as far as the numbers go. Luka was at like 32% on those. So he's still almost league average on the worst type of three-pointer that you can shoot. That was last season. This season, he's been bad to start, but he just had a huge gain from one game. So all of these referendums about will Luka be a good enough shooter or whatever, the truth is the defense is letting you know because they're still guarding him on those pull-ups. He's going to regress back to the mean, but I still think it is – indicative and to a certain degree an indictment on the offense itself that he's not able to generate more than one look a game from behind the arc that isn't off the dribble. That needs to change. They've got to find a way to fix that, because it was like that last year, and so far through the 7 games that they've played, it's still like that. Excuse me, 6 games.
Let me toss some statements out here and see whether you're which side you're on. So first one, easy one, like he was shooting 8% and now he's shooting 20%. He will be a low 30s, maybe 30 exactly percent shooter this season at worst. True, like agree, disagree.
Yeah, he's going to be somewhere in that 30 to 33% range. That's my expectation, just because those are the shots he takes.
Correct. Does he need to be a 30, you know, even a like a 40% shooter or even a 35% shooter to win MVP, to be the best player in the league?
No, not at
Agreed.
All.
Agreed. Yeah.
And
okay.
James Harden has demonstrated this. If he shoots Correct. 40% somehow on those shots, he's cheating.
Yeah. That's nonsense stuff. So, does he need to be taking, like agree or disagree, he should be taking as many threes as he is. He should be taking 8 threes. Like, it is important for the Mavericks mm-hmm. offense for him to take that many. Agree or disagree?
I completely agree. That him taking those shots, and he's guarded on them, it actually opens up cutting lanes for other people. It makes it easier for the roll man in pick and roll because they're so worried about Luka. And Luka is pretty crafty and is often able to turn that defensive pressure into drives to the basket, which is, of course, important because that's when he's drawing his free throws. So, you know, there are plenty of reasons why a three-pointer is useful for your offense beyond just the it being a more efficient shot given the percentages and the points. But there are so many things that it does when you have a primary creator like Luka who is able to hit those tough shots at the rate that he does, because even 32%, which sounds low, is still nuts for how defended those shots are.
So let's say he goes from 32 to 35 on those shots. That is one more make per week. You know, he plays 3 games in a week. That's one right. additional make. So that would be good. Make no mistake. Like, let me say that first. Like,
yeah, it's
better to hit more shots. Like that one's not hard. But it's not, you know, I would agree that it's not fundamentally what's important is that the shots are being taken and the defenses are reacting to them. Here, I've got two more for you.
Well,
agree, disagree. Well, agree or disagree, you know, defenses pay more attention to Luka shooting a three than the percentages say they should. They do.
I mean,
right?
Yeah. He has gravity for sure. Like, he's never going to be left unguarded because he can create shots. And he also is a competent three-point shooter. Like, he's fine, and he's a willing three-point shooter, which is the most important.
Marcus Smart has done for seasons. Right. His entire career, really.
So Jeremy Grant in Denver was taking four threes a game and was hitting 40% of them. So 40% is a great percentage, but four threes a game, you basically are shooting zero. For the job that he's got. So you don't worry about, like, that guy's not a shooter. Just because you, like, it's a shooter, not a maker. Yes, you need to make enough to keep the defense honest, but a 30% or 31% three-point shooter who takes seven a game is going to be guarded, period.
Right.
And in particular, one that does it with the ball in his hands. So, yeah, they have to guard him. Like, you can't not pay attention to him. That's a disaster. Right.
Yeah, I agree with all that. That is, I think, the totality of my thoughts on his step backs, his pull-ups. In fact, I thought it was interesting when the Houston game started. It seemed to me he made a conscious effort to get some better pull-ups. Not the step backs, but he goes around to pick. Mm-hmm. His defender goes under, and he steps into that shot. I thought he made a conscious effort to do that. Mm-hmm. I thought his first three looks were very, you know, seem like him, you know, to be honest, they look like shots he doesn't take that often.
Well, and see, this is what I'm getting at. But this is what I'm saying. So he needs to, that effort, right? Like, we know that he can do it. That conscious effort, that needs to be the way he does it. Like, honestly, if he wants to be more successful, that's the way that he should be approaching it. And then when that's not there, and you have to, like, because too many possessions are ending late shot clock, Luka step back three. That is just – you're winding up in a disadvantageous position despite having, you know, 20 seconds to get stuff happening. And they have to find ways to get him better looks, but also to get the team better looks. This is why they falter late in games. Their offense is just not creating enough of an advantage.
Yeah. He takes those first three. By the second half, he is kind of probably the second quarter, he's reverting back to, you know, every here and there, he's just going to launch a wild one. Mm-hmm. And then there was a moment either late third or early fourth where he was wide open in the corner. Wide open corner, catch and shoot, spot up, three-pointer. And he pump faked and he dribbled out of it. And then he got back into the mode he likes to play in, where he's the creator, the ball's in his hand. So what I'm saying, I think you mentioned earlier, it's an indictment on the offense, maybe to a degree. Mm-hmm. I think Luka knows, you know, Luka is comfortable playing exactly one way.
Sure.
And it turns out that one way makes them, you know, a top three player in the league or you know, something close. And that's not a problem right now. But long term, if you want to get, you know, a third star, I'm not sure a third star is actually available in free agency. Another topic.
Not yet, but he's 20.
Yeah, not at the moment. If they want to get a third star, if they want another ball handler, if they want to eventually over time, you know, reduce just how much he, you know, ball handling he does, how much creation ability he does, just by a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, you still want him, you know, having the ball as much as any player in the league or, you know, somewhere there close. Then one thing they're going to have to do is kind of rewire the way he plays, because that to me was just the striking, you know, as he's taking a step back late in the fourth quarter, but he won't take the wide open pull up corner three or catch and shoot, not pull up. The wide open catch and shoot corner three, that to me was just very amusing and just very telling of Luka. Just for whatever reason, doesn't like their shots, and you know, I think over time, the one thought that popped in my head is that, boy, I do not think Kemba Walker signing him two summers ago would have worked, because it would have caused Luka to kind of change how he plays way sooner than he seems comfortable with. And I do not feel, you know, I don't feel good about it in terms of, you know, the injuries that Kemba is suffering and how much money is committed to him, that Boston is committed to him. I think in that way, it's certainly a concern, but especially just in the way that I think it's going to be some time until you kind of sway Luka into just being a positive off-ball player. And he's not there yet, and he doesn't have to be. It doesn't really matter. You know, it does, but it doesn't. Like, you know, like right now on January 5th or whatever day it is, time isn't real. On January 5th, it doesn't matter. It matters in 2023, I think, a lot more. It might matter this April. It doesn't matter right now. he's this good. You know, he's working back into shape. He's almost there. He had a 33-16-11 triple double. He is one of the best players alive. And so the reason we talk about this stuff, the reason we harp on his negatives is just because we've said everything positive we can say about him. Like it's hard to critique, you know, it's hard to critique someone who is this good. And so, yeah, I think that's why we keep coming back to the three pointers, why we keep coming back to the off ball stuff. And this is a tiny blip that does need fixing that eventually could be a much larger blip, or at least something holding them back from, you know, championship contender status and all that. But yeah, he's real good.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say. Yeah, he's real good. Here's the thing. Just like an update after 2 weeks, like, it's not as bad as it looked occasionally, but it's not as good as it was last year. Not yet. That's kind of like the state of the Mavs to me right now. And the big thing is going to be, what do they look like between now and when Porzingis comes back? And this lineup change sets them up for more success without Porzingis. And Porzingis is coming back, what are we thinking, like 3 weeks?
I think it's weeks or maybe days, double-digit days. I don't think he's back next week, per se, but it seems like he's going, you know, he's fully practicing and all of that. And if they need to be cautious, let's say it's 3 weeks or three-ish weeks. You know, the games they have coming up is a visit to Denver, Orlando, and New Orleans at home. A trip to Charlotte, Milwaukee. Come back to host Chicago, and then three road games against Toronto, Indiana, San Antonio. Now, that stretch does have Milwaukee in there. Denver on the road is tough. Orlando, New Orleans, Indiana have all had good starts. There is one title contender in there. You know, there are several teams that are probably not playoff teams who already beat the Mavericks, which could be taken either way, but I would personally spin it as there is no way this Mavericks team is losing to Chicago twice, is losing to Charlotte twice. You know, I certainly personally feel more comfortable about, you know, them actually being able to beat those teams the second time around. So I guess my point is, if Porzingis is not back until January 22nd, if he's not back until January 26th, they're fine. They're going to be fine. Everything is fine. We knew it would be a slow start, especially when we kind of saw where Luka was at. It doesn't mean there aren't concerns they're not as deep as I thought they were. Even when Porzingis gets back, I have some questions about some of the role players who are both playing in terms of, you know, where Powell is and where James Johnson is. And also in terms of, you know, the ones that are not playing, that Awundu and Green haven't got runouts, which probably means they're not ready and probably means Rick can see that in practice. So I am a little worried about their depth. It does feel like they're maybe missing one player. There's probably a few other things I have some slight concerns with, but overall, I think this team is about where I expect them to be. I would have probably guessed 4-3, not 3-4. But that they're about 500 and that they're going to stay maybe about 500 until Porzingis gets back. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. And they'll get there. And once they get there, I think I've seen signs that there is a better, higher level of play they can reach.
I don't disagree. I think you're right.
Cool. Well, that was my little soliloquy, as I'm known to go off on. And here's a ending to this podcast, as I'm known to also go off on. We're done. Thanks everyone for listening. Thanks, Dave. We'll be back next week. Yeah, we'll be back next week. See y'all then.
Oh my God! Oh! Shut it down! Oh, let's go home! It's a wrap, dude.
That is a wrap.